tape. We're going to continue where we left off last Sunday morning in Sunday school. And we're studying the life of Isaac. We're talking about the way that different people worship God. And we're dealing with the patriarchs. It's not a general subject of worship, but it has to do with the way that God deals with people. Someone said one time that God has a very great sense of humor. Just look at all the different types of people he made. And we are different. We're environmentally different. We're hereditarily different. And we think different ways. We act different ways. And God deals with each one of us individually. And a lot of times we as individuals can't understand other people because we say, well, I'm not like that. And a lot of times, a lot of people want to be like somebody else. And they try to be somebody else. I remember this one preacher who shall go nameless, but he had a Bible that was about the size of the Rock of Gibraltar, went from here down to here. And when he walked into the pulpit, this is about the way he walked. He carried that Bible up into the pulpit. And he was trying to be the role model of what he thought people expected a pastor to be. If you aren't careful, you get trapped in that role model. But God knows everything we are and all about us, and he deals with us separately. Isaac is a man who God didn't make a whole lot of adjustment to. Why? Basically, because Isaac had the kind of faith that God wants a man to have. Now, we're all sinners, and I suppose per unit time and over a lifetime, some of us commit a lot more sins than others. But we're all sinners. It's not so much how many sins you commit, it's the fact that you're just born that way. Well, so was Isaac a sinner? Oh, yeah, like all the rest of us. But Isaac just seemed to trust God. And it seems like if you have confidence in God, which is faith in God, and you believe that God can take care of a situation and he's going to do it and take care of it, then this pleases God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So Isaac apparently diligently sought the way of the Lord. And he just trusted God in everything. You'll find a lot of men in the Bible that didn't. And you'll find that God dealt with them quite differently from Isaac. So this is the oath that God made to Isaac. It's a repeating of the Abrahamic oath. And the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. He didn't say, Isaac, I'm going to do it because you're a good old boy and I like the way you're acting. And because I'm impressed with the way you're acting, and because you've got all this faith in me, and trust me, he said, I'm going to do it for that reason. No, he said, and multiply thy seed for thy father Abraham's sake. So that kind of takes all this great requirement from us to do all these magnificent things and really impress God and please God before he'll do anything for us. But Isaac just seemed to trust him because he believed God would do what he promised. So when this happened, Isaac built an altar. Verse 25. And he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged a well. You might think that after all these other wells he had dug, and finally he got to a place where he found that he dug this one well, and the name of the well meant bounds. It was his. You might think he'd stay there. But he decided to go on. You know, it's almost like he thought, well, God can give me another well somewhere. Notice what happened. And it came to pass that the same day, God didn't seem to wait very long, the same day that Abraham's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged and said unto him, we have found water. Sometimes God makes people wait a long time so their faith will increase. And they'll have all kind of doubts and wonder if he's going to do it. But and their faith needs to grow, and they need to see what a mistake they've made when he finally does. But Isaac, by this time, just thought God would take care of it. Sure enough, he did. And he called it Sheba. Now, Abraham, he had just repeated the Abrahamic oath to him, back up in verse 24. And Sheba means the oath. And he called it Sheba, because God had repeated the Abrahamic oath to him. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba. Now, Beer always means a well, spring, fountain. He called it the well of the oath, Sheba. It was called the well of the oath until this day. Beersheba is still called Beersheba, even until this day, in the year 2002. Isaac died at the ripe old age of 180 years. He never seemed to have any trouble. He was real laid back. He just trusted God. Many times when I look at his life, and I've known this for a long time, because one of the things I discovered for myself a long time ago, and I looked at his life and I felt, you know, I wish I could be like that. But I'm not like that. Isaac died at the ripe old age of 180 years, having lived a life of many blessings with very little testing. Why? He didn't need it. God knows everything. He knows everything. He knows exactly why you do what you do, why you say what you say, and every single thing you think. He knows every thing you inherited, genealogically, I'll get it out in a minute, and environmentally, as you grew up. Why did he not need much testing? Notice in 1 Peter 1 and 6. Now, Peter is an expert on this. 1 Peter 1 and 6, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be. If need be, those three little words are very important. Ye are in heaviness through manifold testings. Why didn't Isaac get a whole bunch of manifold testings like the rest of them? What's the purpose of testing? To increase your faith in God, to increase your trust in God. Some people seem to go through life, and their whole life, even as a member of one of God's churches, is a long series of testings, if need be. God keeps trying to get their attention. He keeps trying to say, trust me. He gets them through heart attacks. He gets them through divorces. He gets them through job loss. He gets them through physical ailments. And they don't learn. They never do learn to trust him. And after all these things occur in their lives, one might think that they would say, well, God got me through that, and I'm going to be faithful to it. And they might start being faithful to God and giving God the worship that he's due. But God deals with people differently. Luke 22, 31 through 34. Here is the ultimate. Here is the exact opposite from Isaac, the man who wrote 1 Peter 1 and 6, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, manifold testings. Luke 22, 31 through 34. Was Peter a zealous Christian? Was he a born-again believer? Oh, yes. He had scriptural baptism. And he was more or less the leader of the group. That is, when Jesus wasn't around. And he had a great zeal for the Lord. And he loved the Lord. And he was a really zealous man to serve God. And he knew he was a sinner. But he was a man who tried to help God all the time. Isaac never seemed to help God. He just seemed to trust God and let God do all the work. Isn't it rather stupid not to let God do all the work? After all, doesn't he have all power in heaven and earth? And people say to me, well, Brother McMurray, God expects this from us. God expects this from us. Brother McMurray, here's what you should do. God, you should do this. And I get these preachers that are oriented toward, if you run a good church, if you run an Ark of Man's Safety, if you build a constitution in the church, if you'll do this, you'll do that, you'll protect yourself. No, you'll get run off from the church. People that come to know a pastor and they see that he's not trying to protect himself, and he's not trying to build fences of protection around him, they'll realize he has a confidence in the Lord, and he's not afraid of them being unkind to him. And if they are, he believes God will take care of it. Peter's an interesting man. He was a very religious man and a very good Christian. He says, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not." You say, well, didn't he have faith in the Lord? Yeah. But he had more faith in himself. That's his problem. That's a lot of preachers' problems. That's a lot of church members' problems. They have confidence in themselves to solve a particular problem, and they rush in and think that God's blessings are behind them, and they start to try to straighten it out themselves. They're afraid of being run off from a church, so they get a constitution. They passed a bunch of rules and regulations, so it will be impossible to run them off. Let me tell you something about people. When you do that, and you set it out there, and make it impossible for them to do that, they're going to find a way to do it. You can rest assured of it. The answer to a preacher's problems is the Lord, and it's the answer to everyone's problem. Peter's problem was he had too much faith in himself and not enough faith in the Lord, and that's your problem. That's your problem, and it is my problem. Now, Peter was already saved, and he was going to heaven. This is the man who wrote about eternal security of the believer. "But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not." And when thou art converted, converted means to turn again. Peter was going this way. "I'll take care of this, Lord. I'll take care of this, Lord. Lord, you're going to bring in your kingdom. I want to be strong in your kingdom. I want to be faithful to you, Lord. I'll never quit. I'll never stop. Lord, I'm with you all the way, 100%. I'll follow you to prison and death." He said, "Peter, when you're converted, when you turn from that attitude and look to me for your strength, and look to me for your guidance, for leadership," he said, "then after that happens," he says, "you help your brothers too, because they've all got the same problem." He said, "strengthen thy brethren." Now this is the man, Peter, who when the Lord was talking to him about some things, he said, no, Lord, it be not so. He didn't want Jesus to die, because Jesus was going to bring in the kingdom, and they were all going to be rulers in it. And he said, "I will follow thee to death and to prison." Now in one gospel it says, "and so said they all." They all looked upon themselves as someone, as people, individuals who were going to help God do something. I've learned something. And I've learned it very slowly. And I hope I've learned it well. Yes, I'm the pastor of this church. Yes, I'm supposed to be the one who oversees the flock. That's all true. But if I try to straighten out messes on my own, if I try to do things by my wisdom as to what I think should be done, I'm going to fall flat on my face. So I pray an awful lot about it, and I ask God to protect the church, I ask God to lead me, I ask God to protect us from the devil. I even ask God to protect us from one another. And I ask God to help us to learn to love one another. I learned something a long time ago. Man can't straighten out problems. God can. How'd I learn it? By experience here, and also by looking at Isaac's life and looking at Peter's. And he said unto him, "Lord, I am ready to go with thee both into prison and to death." In another gospel where this is recorded, there's a verse right in here that says, "and so said they all." And he said, "I tell thee, Peter." Now, when Peter said, "if need be," he knew what he was talking about, because he knew later on what God was doing and why. "Before the cock can crow this day, that thou shalt deny that thou knowest me." Now, he closed out the book of John, the last chapter of the book of John. And after he had asked Peter three times if he loved him, "you know why I trusted my mother so much? Because she loved me. Wasn't any doubt about it. No matter what I did, I was always her son. And no matter what crime I would ever have committed or what lie I told her, or no matter how much I mistreated my mother, she would love me. So what was my trust? That she would love me no matter what I did. That's what faith is. It's faith in God's love. Did I take advantage of her sometimes? But what stopped me from taking advantage of her all the time? Because she loved me. I knew that she would protect me through thick and thin and be on my side continually. Finally, at the close of Jesus' time on this earth, after he'd been resurrected from the dead and asked Peter three times if he loved him, Peter finally got the message. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, speaking to Peter, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. And so did I. I'm not like Isaac. I'm like Peter. God gave me a good mind and a reasonably healthy body. And there was a time in my life when I had tremendous confidence in my own abilities. Oh, I preached the truth. So did Peter. I wanted to do God's work. So did Peter. But I had too much faith in myself, too much confidence in myself, and not nearly enough in God. And that hasn't changed a great deal. But now I understand this. He said, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whithersoever thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whether thou wouldest not. He said, Peter, you got a lot of confidence in your flesh. But he said, Peter, when you get old and that flesh starts to hurt and it starts to ache, and I want you to go and do something, he said, you're going to have to trust me, and you're going to have to stick your hands out here, and you're going to have to let me carry you, and you're going to have to depend on my strength. That's what faith is. It's depending on God's strength and not depending on your own. It's a lesson we all have to learn. Isaac seemed to learn it very quickly. Peter was a very slow learner, and so am I. In Hebrews 12:11, we're told, now no chastening, and as I've told you many times, and this is one of the most important things in the Bible. To understand that word chastening is paideo. And what it means is the raising of a child. It doesn't just mean spanking the child. That's just a small part of it. It means feeding the child. It means teaching the child. It means changing the child's diapers. It means putting up with the mischievousness of the child, correcting the child when it gets past being cute, and raising it like it should be raised. And of course, spanking, discipline, is a part of that. He says, now no raising for the present seemeth to be joyous but grievous. But then he says, after you get through that as a child and your parents have disciplined you, he said, you've learned some things. And he said, I do the same thing. Nevertheless, afterward it yielded the peaceable fruit of righteousness to them which are exercised thereby. Why does it say unto them which are exercised thereby? Because some people just never are exercised thereby. God can try to raise some people. He can try to teach them. He can allow them to be tried. He can allow them to be tested. And instead of realizing God's purpose in their life is to let them grow up and become responsible children of His that have faith in Him, instead they turned on Him. They turn on Him and they blame God for their problems. They say, why would God let this happen to me? Because it's needed. Because you need it. You say, well, I don't think so. That's the problem. You want to rely on your own thoughts, your own abilities, your own expertise, and it won't work. I've learned over the years, I don't know a zip, but the Lord knows everything. And so it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Peaceable fruit of righteousness. You want to know how you describe Isaac? Peaceable fruit of righteousness. At peace. He just trusted God. You say, I can't do that. Yes, you can. Because Isaac did. Unto them which are exercised thereby. Even Peter finally got the message. Even Peter finally changed. Some people never change. God tries to raise them. He tries to correct them. He does everything that is perfect for them. He treats them like His children. They just don't want it. Now look at Hebrews 12:12. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down. Why did God do this to me? God took my child.
Why did God put me through this? My children are giving me fits. Why did God do this? Oh, how sad. I wish I've tried to serve God and just look at what's happened to me.
He said, you lift those hands up. He said, you quit moping around. And the feeble knees, what's going to happen next? And make straight paths for your feet. He says, wake up. He said, start walking straight. He said, you walk the way I want you to walk. You do the things I want you to do. You learn to trust me. You put your life where I tell you to put it. You do the things I tell you to do. Lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. He said, if you don't learn that, and if all you ever get out of the things that I try to do to raise you is to be a spiritual cripple, and you don't want to advance anymore, and you want to stay right there where you are, and you don't want to learn to trust me, he said, you'll turn out of the path, you'll turn out of the way, you'll drop out of church, you'll quit serving me, and you won't care anymore. Well, what happens sometimes? All of a sudden, they aren't tried and tested anymore. They just go out of the way. And God leaves them in their squalor. And God leaves them in their own self-generated, self-created beds of misery because they will not be taught. They will not trust God. Because when you learn to trust God, you're going to be faithful to God. It's a mark of faithfulness that you trust Him. You want to be where He is. You want to hear what He's got to say. You want Him to make changes in your life. If it gets to a point where finally you just say, oh, and you just drop out of church, and you think life's too hard for you, God'll just let you go your way. Oh, He won't send you to hell. But you're just pretty much left on your own. But let it rather be healed. He said, you let me raise you. You start being faithful to me. That's a sign that you have confidence in Him. Now look at 1 Peter 5:10, then 6 through 9. But the God of all peace, 1 Peter 5:10, who have called us into His eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after ye have suffered a while. Sometimes, when we're young, we think we've got things figured out, and we don't have half sense, but we think we do. Sometimes after we go through the Middle Ages and we've suffered for a while and we've been caught up in our own zeal and confidence in our own flesh and we pick out our own way to serve God when it's convenient for us, finally, after we've suffered a while and we begin to get the message, make you perfect, complete, establish, give you roots, strengthen, give you more confidence in the Lord, settle you. You don't have to sit around worrying all the time. You can trust the Lord. You say you can't do this. Yes, you can. And the only reason you won't is because you won't get the message. Start serving God. Start putting your life and your heart where it should be. Start seeking His will for your life. Begin to think you don't know everything. And begin to think that God does. And your confidence in Him will grow. How do you do that? Humble yourselves. We're going to go back before 1 Peter 5:10 to 6 through 9. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Well, how do you humble yourself? Realize the mighty hand of God. Realize the mighty hand of God formed you in your mother's womb. Realize the mighty hand of God brought you forth into this life. Realize the only reason you're here today is the mighty hand of God. Realize the only reason you're saved and going to heaven is the mighty hand of God. And realize that the only one who can sustain your life and keep you breathing physically is the mighty hand of God. And when you start to realize that, you're humbling yourselves. You're realizing that you're totally dependent upon the Lord. Why? That He may exalt you in due time. He'll lift you up when He thinks you can stand it. He'll lift you up when He thinks you can walk. He'll lift you up when He thinks that you're able to walk by His power and you have confidence in Him. That's what Isaac had. Casting all your care upon Him. A lot of people can't do that. They just won't do it. They say, well, I know, Brother McElmurray, I've tried that, and I have confidence in God, but Brother McElmurray, I just, you know, what am I going to do, Brother McElmurray? Cast all your care upon Him. You say, but I can't do it. Yes, you can. If you have faith in Him. I knew my mother would go through anything for me. I knew she'd die for me. She was a very loving mother. casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. I never doubted my mother's love for me. Never. Be sober. If I can trust my mother, who was a sinful woman, why can't I trust God, who made me and formed me in her womb? Be sober, be vigilant. This is what happens. You get turned out of the way. Make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. Be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. He wanted to swallow Peter whole. He wants to swallow you whole. I'll put it personal. He doesn't want her in church. He didn't want any of you here this morning. He doesn't want any of you to be faithful this morning. He doesn't want me to preach the gospel. He doesn't want me to make these trips. He wants me to stay right here, and he'd like for me to just retire and say, my legs hurt and I don't feel too good. And he'd like for me to just go and live on my retirement and get a little house somewhere, and then just Molly and me and Imogene makes three. We're happy in my blue heaven. And then just go and sit in church, watch, eat each other up, watch the church fall apart at the seams, and be happy myself. He'd like that. He didn't want you to keep coming to this church. He'd love for you to go somewhere else. And if he'd rather you get out completely. He'd rather you get completely out of God's Word. He'd like for you to join a Southern Baptist church, even better, an Assembly of God church. He'd love for you to join a Pentecostal church. He'd love for you to do that. He wants to devour you. He wants you to follow the wrong path. Well, how do you resist the devil? Whom resists steadfast in the faith? Taste piston, a system of teaching and doctrine. What do we teach here? Well, we teach that all power is given unto Jesus in heaven and in earth. That's Matthew 28:18. And we teach Matthew 28:19, which follows. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost. We teach that. What else do we teach? Teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. That's the faith. Who's the faith in? Jesus Christ. All power in heaven and earth is given to him. He's the head of this church. He's the foundation of this church. He is spiritually present here this morning. He knows everything I'm saying. He knows everything you're thinking. And he loves this little group here. And he loves me, and he loves each one of you individually. Whom resists steadfast in the faith? How do you do that? You have confidence in him. He told you what to do as a church. He told you the commandments you were to follow. He told you the ordinances you were to observe. And don't feel like you're the Lone Ranger, knowing the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Pray for the other churches. That's something I need to do more of here publicly when I pray. I need to pray for all of God's churches and all of his brethren. I do privately, but quite frankly, not as much as I should. And I realize that that's bad on my part. And I'm sorry for it. And I'm going to try to do better. But sometimes I get so concentrated and caught up in this church, in praying for this church, that I seem to forget about all the others. And try sometimes to isolate myself because I don't like the problems in the other churches. But if I'm really concerned about the problems in the other churches, I need to pray for them more than I do. I don't do it publicly because I don't like to give the impression that I think that we're super duper and they're not. There are a lot of good churches, some I'm sure better than we are, much better. But I do pray for them privately, and I do care about God's Word. So what's the synopsis on all these things I've covered? Let God work in your life. Get the message. Let him raise you. That song, I get a funny feeling in my heart every time I hear it. I'll be home for Christmas. I love that. But it makes me kind of feel funny inside. I don't like that feeling. I remember the Christmases I had with my mother, my uncle, my grandmother. I remember the Christmases I had with Papa Mac and Theo. I remember a lot of the different types of Christmases that I had. And I remember how much I enjoyed them. God works in our lives to draw us together as a family. That's what a local church is. It's a local visible assembly of scripturally baptized believers coveted together to carry out the Great Commission. But it's a family. And the head of the family is Jesus. And the foundation of the local church is Jesus. And that's what a local church is. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, in their family of God? Yes, there's a universal, invisible family of God made up of all believers. It's not a body that meets together. It's all believers. But I don't know them. This is a local, visible family right here. There's no such thing as a local, visible church. It doesn't exist. A church is a called out assembly that assembles together. And it's meant to be a family that grows to love one another, be concerned about one another, care for one another, pray for one another. And you need to be a part of that assembly, and you need to let God work on your heart, your attitude, and your life. That's the purpose of a church here. Well, Charlie, how's Thelma? Doing better? Okay. She getting up and getting around? Okay. She gonna come to choir practice tonight?